crime and punishment, mermaid style. Three mermaid sisters set out to avenge their murdered father, all while having to come to terms with their human relationships, for better or for worse. Creepy fishermen, mermaid experts who know too much, skeezy surfer dudes. Never can, never will, can't hold them down. I'm Mermaids Andrea. Let's dive into mermaids. Greetings and salutations, and welcome to the Mermaid Movie Club, a celebration of merfolk and media. Welcome to our second September show. How is everyone? You good? I hope so. Human world is still a mess. Turns out the crab was right the whole time. It just gets messier, it seems. You know, it's nice to find things to distract yourself with. You know, maybe you picked up a hobby. Maybe you're making things. Maybe you're diving into some crossword puzzles, as I have been. Some of us here in the United States have gone back to work as America reopens. I live in Florida. I think we were one of the earliest states to begin reopening procedures. Of course we were. I went back to work in July after 4 months of watching nothing but The Daily Show and RuPaul's Drag Race. And that was, of course, when I took my hiatus, as you all know. But, of course, the Mermaid Movie Club reopened as well. But at least podcasts are something you can enjoy while socially distancing. You love to see it. Or hear it, I guess, although you can watch some podcasts, of course. Just not this one. As of now. I want to figure out how to really get that going. But anyway, before we really begin, allow me to explain what we do here for any first-timers. Sorry. For any first-timers we've got hanging around. This is a podcast where we watch a lot of mermaid movies. So many. I've got like a whole Amazon watch list of movies that I've got on deck. We watch them. We talk about them. We talk about the conventions they have in common with other mermaid-centric films and stories, the historical aspects, mythology, social issues, if applicable, basically whatever we want. We open that up to social media. All my social networks are in the show notes, just FYI. Follow me, be my friend. As well as the Anchor voice message box. I'm still toying with the idea of a Discord server, but I've never really used it, so I'm still kind of on the fence about it, but I'd be willing to learn if it's a good space for us to chat. But that's the long and short of it. So if that sounds cool to you and you feel like you're in for the ride, then feel free to subscribe on whatever app you're using to listen to this show and let all your mer friends know about it. If you're not entirely for this and think it's super cringe, then maybe I suggest keeping that to yourself. The cool thing about keeping that to yourself is that it costs zero sand dollars and takes no time at all. Easy, right? Some of y'all should learn how to do that. But I digress. Anyway. The film we're going to be talking about today is a film called Mermaids. I have to keep clarifying something because of another famous film that shares its name. No, it is not the film Mermaids from 1990 that stars Cher, Winona Ryder, and Christina Ricci. It's not that one. Yes, I know Cher is wearing a pretty mermaid costume in the poster. It's false advertising. Give me a film where Cher is actually a mermaid, and yeah, we can talk about that. In the meantime, I'll just watch Burlesque on Netflix for the millionth time. So, no, this is not that Mermaids. This movie was a made-for-TV film that premiered on the American network PAX TV, P-A-X, on November 15th, 2003. That network is now known as ION Television, aka the network where major network crime dramas go to die. Or after they die. In fact, let me provide a little bit of background info on that because I am like obsessed with like television branding stuff. I don't know why. So this is really exciting. Okay. So PAX, I learned this while I was researching it, PAX was founded by Home Shopping Network co-founder, interesting, Lowell Bud Paxson, who sought to create an alternative to the quote-unquote raunchy and profane content of the major American networks at the time, like your ABCs, your CBSs, your Foxes, what have you. A lot of its early programming consisted of reruns of older television shows like Touched by an Angel, original dramas such as Sue Thomas FBI, revivals of game shows like Supermarket Sweep, which oddly enough is being revived in the near future by ABC, children's programming, infomercials, and Christian worship programs. Of course, this is all really funny when you look at the programs that ION runs now, including NCIS, CSI Miami, Criminal Minds, Blue Bloods, an overwhelming majority of syndicated major network crime dramas, and the original series Private Eyes. The reason I find this funny is because it seems like this was exactly the kind of stuff Bud Paxson was trying to create an alternative to, but he actually resigned from the company in 2005 and passed away a decade later. Also, this story is not unlike that of Pat Robertson's Family Channel that eventually became what we now know as Freeform, the home of Siren. See? It all comes full circle. But, like, as I was watching this, I had that, like, in the back of my mind, and I'm like, how, like, not trying to spoil it ahead of time, but just, like, based on the tone of the film, how did this movie make it past Bud Paxton's radar? How did that get there? It's not necessarily like, it's not like it's, how am I trying to put this? It's not like it's gory or anything. It's not overt. I'll get into that a little bit more in a second. But at the same time, you know, considering they used to run stuff kind of akin to 700 Club that Freeform to this day still airs from its Family Channel days. Again, it feels a little bit like the kind of thing that Bud was trying to create an alternative to. So it's strange, but, you know, it happened. And maybe we'll be better for it. We'll get into that in a second. The film stars Sarah Delane, credited as Sarah Lane, Nikita Agar, and Erica Haynatz as our core mermaid cast of June, Venus, and Diana, respectively. I see that Roman mythology reference. Look at you. It is directed by Ian Barry, written by Brent V. Friedman, Daniel Cerone, and Rebecca Swanson. Production credits by Ian Barry, Martin Brown, Michelle Bruston, and Timothy O. Johnson under the Taylor Brown Corporation and Viacom Productions. This film revolves around the story of three mermaid sisters who set forth on a quest on land to avenge the death of their father. There's some mild violence and sexual content, but I couldn't find an age rating on it, which is interesting. It's a made-for-TV movie, so it probably is somewhere around like a TV PG or TV 14, honestly. That puts it around a PG-13 by MPAA standards for theatrical releases. I did way too much research into the TV side of things. I'm not sorry for it at all, because that's just a weird interest I have. So, sorry, not sorry. It's also really funny, because I actually don't watch a lot of TV. Like, literally, I was, like, again, I said, like, throughout the break, I was watching The Daily Show and I was watching RuPaul's Drag Race. What was the last TV show I finished? I don't even remember what it was. I didn't even finish The Good Place. I think I finished the first season of it. Anyway, that's beside the point. Again, I don't know. Also, I know this movie has a trio of mermaids with superpowers. Rest assured, this predates H2O by about 3 years. This was 2003. I think H2O began in like 2006. It was also filmed in Australia, like H2O was. IMDb said it was filmed at the Village Roadshow Studios in Queensland, which it also tells me that's where H2O was filmed. Okay. Well, that's weird because I thought H2O was filmed in Brisbane. So maybe I just don't know my Australian geography. I'll probably correct that at some point. Now, was this movie an inspiration for H2O? I don't know. Do they take place in the same universe? Unlikely. A few IMDb reviews tell me this was intended to be a TV pilot, so, I'm not insinuating anything, but, can anyone confirm if anyone who worked on this film also worked on H2O, or does the rabbit hole kind of end there? I am genuinely curious. Socials, show notes, let me know. But until then, let's just get right into it. This is Mermaids. We begin underwater. We always do. We're following a pretty tale underwater and a fishing boat above it. You've got these two bumbling fishermen fishing, naturally. It's like almost as if that's what fishermen do. You know, setting off diet soda bombs in the ocean. Something about artificial sweeteners being as toxic to fish as it is to humans, which is some interesting logic, but okay, you do you. This, of course, agitates a local merbeing who signals itself the way all merfolk do, flicking their tail above water. And here's what's funny. The merman here gets very, very close to the boat. Close enough that you can tell exactly what it is. It's very clear what it is. Yet they're still asking, what is that thing? I'd understand it more if they asked, is that what I think it is? Which I think they do at some point, but come on. They respond by doing what they usually do with anything with fins. They kill it. They shoot it dead with a rifle. Don't ask me what kind. I'm no expert on firearms. I don't know. So this in turn agitates another mermaid. Enter the trident-wielding Diana. They try to shoot her, too, but she just punctures a hole into their boat with her trident. You go, Diana. You get him, girl. And yet, after all this, after Diana leaves, trident in tow, flicking her fluke, you know, the way they always do, they still ask, what was that thing? Well, it wasn't a flippin' Coke bottle, John. Ugh. From that point, you begin to realize you're not watching a kid-oriented mermaid film, which is kind of refreshing, because we've only covered maybe two of those out of now, I think it's now seven we've done so far. And I think actually this makes the third one. So The Mermaid was the first one, and that was the fourth episode. It was the first more adult one that we did, but it was the fourth episode. And then Splash was the second one, that was the fifth episode. So Fishtails kind of broke the chain a little bit. And I'm not saying that adult-oriented movies are inherently better than movies marketed toward kids. Not saying that. I would never imply that. But I do have to wonder where the distinction was made that mermaids were inherently a kid thing, and that being into mermaids past the age of like 12 is a cause for concern. No, I'm not projecting. Yes, I am. No, I'm not. Maybe? Anyway, getting something like this offers a new perspective, but it doesn't come across as a gross perversion of mermaid lore because mermaids honestly have been sexualized for centuries. So, again, I'm just wondering, if mermaids are supposed to be a kid thing, then please explain sirens to me. Make it make sense. But let's get back to the action. For the proof that this is definitely not a kid movie, the next setting is a bar. This seems not too unlike the famous dive bar in Sacramento, which features live mermaids. It's a thing, look it up. Venus is one of the bar's mermaid performers, with a natural allure. Like, she's hypnotic. A natural water goddess. All the men love her. To the point where the bar owner's wife insists that she knows exactly what she is. No more games, Venus. The bar owner knows what you really are. Well, the bar owner's wife. The bar owner's wife knows what you really are. And that is a gold digger. It's 2003. Just a friendly reminder that this film was made in 2003. It's better than where we were at with Splash in 1984, but it's still not where we should be. Either way, 0 out of 10 would not work for this woman or her gross husband. Next is June, who works at a wildlife facility with seals and dolphins and stuff. Oh, serving Cleo's Rotori teas, I see. Honestly, I was too distracted by the seal in this scene to really remember anything that happened because it's basically just Sea Dog. It's basically my two favorite things. What do you expect? I just know there's something mentioned about an aquarium grand opening, and that's going to become important later. So, just letting you know that. It's also important to note that June can talk to sea life, as demonstrated by her communicating with the seal. I really wish I could communicate with my dogs like that, because then maybe they'd stop trying to eat my food. As in addition to everything else. And then maybe they'd stop barking at like 3 a.m. I'd really like that. Then there's Diana. We've already met Diana, and now we're meeting Diana again. And she's giving me Madison here. Showing up naked on the beach, standing in front of a Jeep loaded with two thirsty surfer dudes. They offer her a ride, and she takes them up on it. In addition to their clothes, as well as their Jeep, which she crashes. Not sure what you expected there, Diana. You're not a licensed driver or anything. Diana's in search of a mermaid, so the surfers direct her to the bar that Venus works at. Wow. I actually had an answer for that. Whenever I ask that question around here, they usually either laugh or send me to the Barbie aisle. Thanks. I appreciate it. Diana shows up at the bar and immediately asks for seawater, because that's not weird. But come on. She's a mermaid. She's got legs. She's new in town. She finds Venus here, and this is where we discover that Diana isn't exactly accustomed to human stuff. She doesn't understand hot drinks, for example. Those just kind of blew Venus's mind, she says. She doesn't get alcohol, but not gonna lie, I kind of get that. She walks like I do after a long shift, and that's like practically a waddle. It's really kind of embarrassing to watch me walk after a long shift. More importantly, she seems rather insulted by Venus's tank mermaid job. She's like, mortals can't know about us. And Venus is like, oh, come on. It's not like they've seen my tail or anything. My real one, anyway. Which is weird, because this movie seems to go by the Splash H2O mechanism of the dry human wet mermaid. And she works in a tank filled with water and still wears a fabric tail. So explain me how that works. Is her real tail covered by the fake one or something? I have questions. I have so many questions about this movie. So one of those questions is, Well, not really. None of those questions. But this is a question. Why is Diana here? What's Diana's business on land? She prefers to stay in the ocean, so this is out of character. Well, Diana reveals to Venus that their father has died. Doesn't really go too much further into it. Just reveals that he's died. And that's enough to make Venus crumble right there. She seems to be taking it harder than Diana, but my guess is that either Diana has already taken her time to mourn, or she's putting on a brave face and bottling it in. Please don't bottle in your emotions, guys. I do not endorse that. So, remember when I mentioned the aquarium opening? There was an aquarium opening party. There's a big party for it, and June is there. She's chatting up with a dolphin, because dolphin understands. Dolphin always understands. This guy Randy shows up, and they start talking. I think the implication is that they're kind of a thing. Like, she likes him, but he's engaged to somebody. Remember, I was distracted during that whole first June scene because there just so happened to be mermaid dog there. So I probably missed it. So thank the seal. And out of nowhere, June falls into the water. So we all know what happens here. We know. Randy's none the wiser and he tries to rescue her, but she insists on staying because the water's fine. Yeah, just gonna stay right here. I feel great. All the while, this kid is watching that transformation take place, and that kid probably grew up to be a mermaid hunter. Don't they all? But that poses a question. The next scene poses a question. What happened to June's dress? It seems to disappear after she goes under, but when we see her in the next scene, it's back. That's a question I have about H2O as well. In Splash, it makes sense because Madison is naked when she comes out of the water. When she becomes a mermaid again after leaving the president's dinner, she's still got the blue dress on. But in the case of the general H2O universe and this movie, clothing ultimately disappears, only to reappear when they're back in their human form. All I'm asking is, where does the clothing go? Where does it go? Please explain me this. I feel like I've asked this before. I think we talked about this on Twitter a little bit. But again, I'm just, the logic of it is just lost on me. But again, you can't apply logic to mermaids. What do I always say? I love breaking my own rules. It's so much fun. Anyway, Randy tracks down June's houseboat, I guess to check on her and see that she's okay. They both catch mermaid signal in the distance, which could only be one of her sisters. And June goes back to her houseboat to find a flashlight, only to find that Venus and Diana are literally in her houseboat waiting for her. She sends Randy back on his way and basically tells him to go use his patrol boat to find the thing. And he's just like, huh, okay, cool. Dude, it's never that easy. It is never that easy to just get somebody off your back like that. He's got to be like super chill or something. So I guess I see why she likes him. So he leaves and June rejoins her sisters. Now here in this next scene, we get a load of exposition, so buckle up. Diana reveals to June that their father passed away by way of a fisherman's rifle. June seems less than sympathetic. Turns out Daddy disowned June, while Diana and Venus were seemingly the model daughters. Diana hunted with him, in June's words, tried so hard to be the son he never had, and Venus was just a kiss-up. Now, in this dynamic between the three of them, Venus tries desperately to be the middle mer, but after June drags her into it, that's just not possible. It just seems like June was trying to forge her own path, and Daddy was not a fan of this. June has lived on land now for 3 years. Venus is kind of half and half, it seems like, and for Diana, this is literally day one, hence why she's kind of awkward on land. It seems like June was not content to just stay in the ocean and be the same kind of model daughter that Diana and Venus were, so that's why she's been on land as long as she has, and also why it seems like Venus and Diana had a sweeter reunion than when June got into the mix. This movie definitely has a feeling very similar to Charmed for me. So June is definitely the Phoebe, Venus is the Piper, and I think Diana's the Prue. So who are their H2O counterparts? Because again, I'm pulling up a lot of like H2O similarities as well. I think June's Ricky. Absolutely. Ever noticed that in both H2O and Charmed, they have three main characters, one of which gets replaced in the middle by someone else? Coincidence? Eh, don't think not. Actually, yeah, it's a coincidence. It's totally a coincidence. I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this. We're going to move on. We are going to move on. They managed to break into a fish warehouse with the help of Venus's Jedi mind trick powers of seduction. I guess it's important for me to note that she's not wearing underwear. She just has to point that out, so thanks for pointing that out. As well as Diana's trident, which can also be a magic transforming shell hair clip. What a magical What a magical girl vibe that is. I guess they're going in looking for their father's body, but find nothing. But their time is limited, because the tide is lowering, and they're going to be mermaids again in a minute. That's similar to the aquamarine stipulation, only it's directly related to tides, rather than the moon. They have tails at low tide and legs at high tide, that sort of thing. Another creative way to play with that convention. Malik pops in. Malik was the fisherman earlier. Malik was the fisherman that killed the merman, which was their father. I forgot to mention his name. My bad. He sees the wall's been gored by a trident or a werewolf. It's hard to tell. All the while, June is stuck in mer mode again, but manages to escape before anyone can find her. And that is the second time now June has almost found herself in a sticky situation with humans. Maybe she's become so accustomed to human life that she forgets? It's an idea. Next day, back at June's boathouse. She and Venus wake up to find Diana isn't there. Where's Diana? Oh, just at the foot of Malik's bed, threatening him with Old Reliable. She's gone by the time he wakes up, but I think he's starting to catch on. So he goes to visit some woman. I think I missed, like, who she was or what she does, so I'm kind of lost on that. But she is that character. In nearly every live-action mermaid movie, she is that character who knows everything about mermaids. She's Big John from the 13th Year. She's Rulon from The Mermaid. She's Walter in Splash. She's that character. And I feel like we're going to see a couple more of these going forward. So just buckle up, y'all. This woman tells him that she's always been on the lookout for mermaids. She's mad for mermaids. Her words, not mine. Because she knows a mermaid can grant one wish. I think that's the second or third movie I've heard that in. I think it came up in Fish Tales. I know it came up in Aquamarine. It was a big part of Aquamarine. But literally, I'd never heard of it until I saw Aquamarine. So where does that even come from? Also, I don't even think that's in the Aquamarine novel, just FYI. So I don't know, like, what that's in reference to. I Googled things and found nothing. Oh, for the record, about that woman, we never see her again. Yeah. I felt like she was going to build up to something really crazy, or that she and Malik were going to team up in some way, but no, that didn't happen. That was a weird amount of build up for a character who doesn't appear again, but okay. So that wish convention comes back up in just a second as the sisters continue their merman hunt as one man on a boat. I can't tell if it's Malik because at some point all these middle-aged white dudes in fishing shirts look the same. This guy kind of offhand says, "I wish you'd come and clean my boat." Oh, Fairly Odd Parents clause. He said he wished, so they gotta do it. Ugh. Meanwhile, Venus pops back into the bar again to begin her shift and asks her boss, Earl. This is the actual butthead. She asks her boss for grievance. Her father just passed away, so obviously. It doesn't quite work. As far as Earl is concerned, this fish is too much of a freak to have a father. Is he a cod? A flounder? He goes on to say that he essentially owns Venus and that she's essentially powerless to him. So as I was watching this, I began to wonder if he knew Venus's secret and maybe his wish was that she'd be his mermaid tank girl and help his bar get business or something along those lines. What I can tell you is that the treatment of these women in this film from the men in this film is horrific. Going back to Diana's first moments on land, where she gets into the Jeep with the surfer dudes before she throws them out of the Jeep to try to make moves on her while she's naked. Venus's bosses treat her as less than human, quite literally. June has it a little easier so far, but never say never. Again, this is 2003. We've got them in these kind of strong heroine roles now, but the objectification is still there. They've got quite a bit of agency, but still find themselves having to defend themselves against men who just want what they want from them. Now I think about it, it sounds like not a lot has changed. Even after, like, hashtag Me Too and hashtag Time's Up, these kinds of portrayals aren't as common in media, but they play out in real life all the same. Back to the action. Turns out there is an explanation for why Earl has control over Venus. June explains that when a mortal possesses a mermaid's special item, I think someone refers to it as a birthright at some point, that might be in the form of some kind of item. The mortal basically controls that mermaid. I just said item twice. It's a mermaid's, it's referred to as a birthright. It's in the form of an item. I wrote that weird. In this case, he's got Venus's tiara. I'm guessing for Diana, it's her magical transforming hair clip. And for June, it's this clamshell compact thing, which was the thing I always wanted as a kid, but didn't get one until like a few years ago because Mermaids are so hot right now. In her clamshell, she can see an image of Randy drowning and bolts because she doesn't believe in the Leslie Knope adage of hoes before bros. Although, at the top, I did mention the Roman myth naming convention. Diana is the goddess of the hunt, therefore adept hunter. Venus is the goddess of love, and she's quite flirty and has hypnotic siren Jedi mind trick powers of seduction. June is probably based on Juno, the goddess of marriage and childbirth. I think it's safe to say she's after Randy, so there's that. But why does Randy's image come up in June's magical compact? Because he's on Malik's boat, actively trying to track him down, gets whacked in the head by an overhead rigging, and knocked into the ocean. Does he get saved by a mermaid? Yes. Is it June? What gave it away? But I gotta talk about this shot right here. Like, after she saves him, it's a shot of Randy coming to, and what does he see? A blurry yet glimmering image of a gorgeous woman who just so happens to be a mermaid, but he can't tell, hovering over him as swelling orchestral music plays. What does that remind you of? It's almost as if she should be singing or something. Come on, work with me here. That's literally the part of your world reprise. Like, that's so obvious. That was blatant. I'm not accusing the film of copying Little Mermaid, as I think it was a cute nod to the movie. But as you'll find out, as the movie continues, that June and the Little Mermaid, not necessarily Ariel, they have a bit in common. But that's still not the best part of this scene. Nor is it the fact that Randy just probably suffered a substantial head injury and is doing a really good job at hiding it. No. It's the child that claims that Randy was saved by SpongeBob SquarePants. That's what it is. Thank you, SpongeBob. Thank you for your service. Of course, we still have to check in with
the antagonists.
Malik and his little friend. Back at the warehouse, there's a freezer. They open up the freezer. And the dad's body was in there the whole time. I don't even think the sisters opened up the freezer when they were there. Or if the freezer was even there when they were there. But now we've opened it, and there's a big old frozen fish in that box. As of right now, we don't know what they want with the body, but we can only assume it's going to be a trophy. Again, gross and supremely creepy. I think I mentioned this in Fish Tales, but I already find hunting trophies super creepy. Of any kind, really, it doesn't matter. Deer, foxes, fish, literally, all of it creeps me out. As much as characters in this movie claim up and down that merfolk are not human and are basically animals, consider this. A merperson is still human from the waist up. So it still looks like half a dead human body from the waist up when it's dead. You know? You wouldn't put a human body on your wall. But that's only okay if it's part human? Okay. Good to know. I swear we had this discussion in Fish Tales. I can't believe we need to have it again. As much as I wish we were doing something nicer next up. Oh, episode 8 is going to begin the Halloween shows. Spoiler alert. So I basically got like maybe 4 episodes in a row, including this one and Fish Tales, to put these horrifying mermaid trophy images in my head. It's a good job. I know how to pick them, you guys. Anyway, Diana has to meet Venus back at the awful bar where she can't get off work. Really would not want to work here. Funny bit here, one of the surfers from earlier recognizes Diana and gets the shell out of Dodge. I mean, Diana could probably body slam him, so I get it. Venus tries to defend her decision, I use that term very, very loosely, to be a tank performer, saying, "I have a very promising career as an aquatic dancer. Does the name Esther Williams mean anything to you?" Of course, referring to Esther Williams, the famous swimmer and actress who played Annette Kellerman in the film Million Dollar Mermaid. That's important. So I don't know about Diana, but yes, Venus, the name Esther Williams does mean something to me. Thanks for asking, even though you didn't ask me. Diana sets off on a quest to find Venus's tiara, and then it dawns on me that when she went into Earl's office earlier looking for something, before they had that whole confrontation, that's what she was looking for. The pieces all fall together. Earl's already in his office when Diana breaks in, and he asks her, "How'd you do that?" And she says, "Roids." She says that, like, if someone earlier was trying to explain to her what steroids were, and I don't think she got it. I don't think she understood that they're literally drugs. So she just says, "Roids." I think she's, like, of the belief that that means it's something like, just, like, strength or motivation or something. No, girl, they're drugs. Performance-enhancing drugs. Anyway, So this scene, it kind of half confirms my Earl theory. Yes, Earl knew Venus was a mermaid. And he pretty quickly figured out that Diana was one too. But Venus, I don't think Venus granted Earl's wish. Not in the sense that, like, he said, I wish, whatever. Because he owns Venus's tiara, her birthright or whatever, he kind of forced his desire onto her. But it's funny because I feel like he could have done that by making a wish, but maybe he didn't know. So, I don't know. So they have this epic duel. Tridents and I forgot what he was holding. Diana wins, of course, because she's Diana. She's the goddess of the hunt. She collects Venus's tiara and an interesting conch shell that was with it. I feel like this is going to be important. So then Diana returns Venus's tiara, but Venus hates it because it's so tacky. But okay, fine. Whatever you say, Diana. Venus finally lives her dream of quitting her job, but makes amends with Betty, the crappy club runner woman from earlier, the bar owner's wife. That woman that accused Venus of being a gold digger and all that. Yeah, it's her. Anyway, remember that conch shell that Diana found? Remember when I was talking about special items? That shell, that was Betty's item. Get that. Betty was a mermaid the whole time. So, like, it was like Venus hands her the shell. And she turns into, like, a younger version of herself with these gorgeous green curls. And honestly, this hairstyle, I swear, I would see this on somebody, like, now. This is a very, very current-looking hairstyle. Very current-looking hair color. I'd be lying if I said this wasn't a vibe. I want to say that, like, what happened was, while Earl held onto her shell, she was, like, confined to human aging systems. Remember, mermaids in this universe lived, like, several hundred years. And because of that, she aged like a human. So Mermaid Betty looks like she's maybe in her 20s, but Human Betty, let's see, Genevieve Lemon was about 45 at the time. So we'll go with that. Venus basically tells Mermaid Betty that she can be free now and return to the ocean. And Betty seriously considers it before rejecting Venus's offer and returning the conch to her. Why? Who are you, Siren Phillips? But she explains, even though she's finally getting Earl out of her hair, she still has a young daughter that she can't leave behind. And you know what? I can't fault her. But she's going to have a shell of a story for Tess. Meanwhile, as this all is happening, Diana is being accosted by the police for wrecking a car the night before. That's right, the surfer dude called the cops on Diana, so now she's in police custody. And, to make matters worse, the cop has taken possession of Diana's hair clip, finds its neat little feature the hard way, and keeps that while Diana's in the cell. All with, like, 1 hour low tide. This sounds like a really, really good time to build some tension, but this gets resolved fairly quickly as Venus steps in at the right time to give this cop the Venus treatment and bail Diana out. They break out and steal a cop car, where Diana has her own little siren trick by emitting an ear-piercing scream that incapacitates this lady cop that was on her way to deal with him. I guess the magic siren hypnotism thing doesn't work on people of the same sex. Okay. They steal the car, but time's not on their side as they transform while they're behind the wheel. It all seems a bit tense here as they wreck another car. That's the second car wrecked in this movie, I think. And they risk being found by the lady cop, but don't worry. They don't get caught. They never do. And that brings me to another issue I have. And it's that these girls always seem to conveniently find a way out every time. Like, think about it. The fight with Diana and Earl, while not low stakes by any means, I mean, we're fighting for a mermaid's freedom here, it still feels kind of unfulfilling. Although, there was at least build up to that scene, I think, with Earl and Venus's confrontation. So that, you know what, that's fine. But then you have, like, Venus just so happening to slip in at the right time and getting Diana out of jail before she transforms. And that's okay. I feel like it's okay when that happens every so often. But literally every single conflict, almost every single conflict that comes up, as far as I can tell, with the exception of, like, the main overarching conflict of the movie, it gets resolved in, like, minutes. So they always manage to get out just like that. So then they crash the police car and they're just close enough to the ocean to make a clean escape. Again, very easy. All this while June and Randy are on a date at some non-specific restaurant, and she transforms in the middle of the date. And again, clean escape when Randy gets up to get her water. It's too easy every time. It's not that I don't think it should be so easy all the time. Hear me out here. But there's opportunities there to build attention, And they do like the bare minimum. In the case of the date, it comes off as more of like a whoops, silly, kind of silly rom-com moment, kind of splashy. With Venus and Diana's side of the story, it's too many large conflicts that don't take enough time to build up for me. Again, that's me. Maybe you feel differently, and that's cool. All opinions expressed on the Mermaid Movie Club podcast are those of Mermaid's Andrea, unless otherwise stated. By the way, I'm sorry. I find these scenes of Randy and June's date boring. Incredibly boring. But this is coming from somebody who doesn't really care for romantic movies that much. I don't care about romantic storylines that much. That's just me. Bear that in mind. I'm coming from a fairly biased position. Don't ask me why I don't care about romance. I just never did, and I still don't really. I'm not against it, but I'm just not super entertained by it. End of story. The next morning, the sisters regroup. June, still fresh from her date with Randy, insists she's found her soulmate and offers another nugget of mermaid lore. When a mermaid falls in love with someone and that someone loves her back, they share a soul. It sounds a bit like the whole twin flame thing, if you're into that, although it's not really the same thing as a twin flame thing, so I don't know why I brought it up. But it plays a bit on the aspect of The Little Mermaid, the original story, where mermaids don't have souls. They don't have human souls. Remember when I said that June and the Little Mermaid had a lot in common? This is what I mean. We all know that in the original story, the Little Mermaid does not have a human soul, or a mortal soul. That's the word I want to use. Immortal, not human. Obviously not human. But they don't have an immortal soul. So then when the Little Mermaid dies at the end, she rises up into the air, and the daughters of the air, or whatever they're called, they say, oh, we also don't have an immortal soul, but we can win one by doing good deeds and that sort of thing. So that's basically what I think what they're getting at here. But Diana doesn't buy into this spiritualist mumbo jumbo, because of course she doesn't. She's kind of the straight man. She just wants to find Malik, kill him, and go home. She's over this. She is so over being human. So here, we actually have a case of a mermaid who's turned human who just wants to be a mermaid again. She feels more at home in the ocean, more in her element. She hates it here. She's had it. And so she just breaks down and cries, which is very out of character for Diana. And I think her sisters are just kind of taken aback by that. But put yourself in Diana's fins for a moment. She's just lost her father, and she's on a quest to find his killer and his body, all the while navigating an unfamiliar world with legs she's not used to using. And it seems to never get easier for Diana. Until, after seeing a photograph of the supposed merman trophy in Malik's freezer on the cover of the local newspaper, the sisters wind back up at his warehouse and, sure enough, there he is. We went from, we need to find him, to, we found him, literally in a minute. Like I said, there's some issues with build-up and tension here. Maybe they just realized that they were better off going to the warehouse during the day. I mean, it makes sense. They get in, Malik is there, but he's already on alert. He knows what they are. And he knows what to expect. So because of that, Venus's siren Jedi mind trick powers of seduction actually don't work. Because Malik already knows what he's dealing with. Another interesting stipulation. He pulls out the wish card, so of course they have to oblige. Still hate it. He wants treasure. He wants those mermaids to find him treasure in like X amount of time. To make him wealthy beyond his wildest dreams. Jeez. Whatever happened to wishing for world peace? Or like endless tacos or something. Or, you know, my personal favorite, I wish you'd give me a tail for free. Niche mermaid humor. Thank you. So we kind of split off. Venus goes looking for the treasure. Diana accosts Malik's friend and tortures the information out of him, as she does. And then you have June, who met up with Randy again. And Randy's upset because June left him in the middle of their date because fishy stuff happened. You know. She pulls that Madison card of, I have this secret, and I really want to tell you, but, like, not now. Randy can't stay mad at June, so he picks her up bridal style, and they kiss as the sprinklers go off. The sprinklers went off. Uh-oh. Oh, great. June's got some splaining to do now because the sprinklers went off and we all know what happened here. So June calls her sisters to let her know that Randy just saw her tail and he's totally cool with it because mermaids were totally like a fantasy of his as a kid. So this is just a win-win-win. I didn't need to know that, Randy. I really didn't, but thanks. Diana is less than thrilled, but Diana's never really thrilled or even really bemused. But Venus will take care of it. Somehow. She doesn't explain why, but it probably has something to do with her Siren Jedi mind trick powers of seduction. Probably. That's usually what it means. So they bring Malak the treasure they promised, and you'd think he'd be done, but of course he's not. He's going to get everything he can out of three mermaids at his disposal. Malak's whole plan is to have this, get this, have this floating marine theme park in the middle of the ocean. He's got tanks set up. He's going to be selling cheap tourist junk. Basically like SeaWorld on a boat, only this time they have actual mermaids. Yeah, I see you, SeaWorld, taking the mermaids out of Journey to Atlantis. It's fine. I don't like you anyway for a myriad of reasons. This doesn't last long as Randy comes in clutch, bringing in law enforcement to investigate a homicide. Homicide? Huh. At first, Malak is kind of taken aback by this because, yeah, he did kill something, but it wasn't, like, human or anything, so it doesn't matter. Thanks for pointing that out. But when they open the freezer to find the merman body, it has legs. There's no ice in the freezer. No ice, no water, no water, no fins. Mermaid science! Malak plays that whole, those things aren't human, so why care about them? Card. And I've had it with this thing at this point. And all that before he's taken into custody. Dang. That merman biology really came in handy this time, but perhaps this was one thing I honestly did not predict. I was under the impression that if he was dead, his body would no longer shift. I was proven wrong. Okay, there it is. The plan for Daddy's body is to take it back out to the sea, where it will dissolve into foam, rise up into the sky, and spread out across the world through the rain. Again, taken straight from the story of The Little Mermaid by Hans Christian Andersen. So now we're going to get into an epilogue. Our story has reached a conclusion, but it doesn't quite end there. That's what epilogues are for. Each girl, again, has her own story. June? Well, suddenly Randy's forgotten ever learning that June was a mermaid because of Venus's siren magic. She took care of it like I said she would. And now he's engaged to his girlfriend, Cynthia. Again, that callback to The Little Mermaid. I actually don't think they were engaged at first, like I said. I think they were just kind of like a thing. But now, suddenly, they're engaged. Ah, what could have been? Those all seem to happen in June's storyline. Venus, with some help from Diana, bought the bar off of Earl, who is in the process of divorce from Betty. The bar is now called the Mermaid's Tavern. I think it was called Breakers before. Now it's called Mermaid's Tavern. And it's run by women. Specifically, it's run by Betty and Venus. You love to see it. There's definitely been a change of heart since Venus returned the shell to Betty, and I think that was something that was slowly developing throughout the film, and I really love the resolution here. As for Diana, June invites her to stay with her and Venus at her houseboat, which Diana really doesn't want to because she hates this human stuff. And also because having three mermaids under one roof is basically just begging for every magical creature under the sun to come knocking on your door with a wish. Girl, that happened 2 years ago in a little movie called Shrek. But eventually Diana relents, because Big Sis still has to stick around and protect her own. So, the three sisters finally come together under one roof and live happily ever after. Except for Diana. Someone please put in a good thought for Diana. She hates it here. And that, my friends, was Mermaids. So, as we do for every episode, we're going to break down some common mermaid conventions seen in this movie that are popular in other features. In a segment that I'm kind of in a trial mode with this name for the segment. Let me know what y'all think. A segment that I call, for now, Flip the Script. And here's where I drop some theme music. If I had it! Mermaids was an interesting one in that the tropes are there, but many are applied to a single character and an ensemble cast, although some are applied to the cast on the whole. However, most of what we find in this movie is actually derived from mythology, so we're going to really get into that. Basically, this is the big mythology talk. I said we talk about mythology, and here's where we're doing it. I keep my promises, right? Don't I? At this point, I don't know. The first thing, obviously, it's the human when dry thing. I think this is going to be one of the most common ones. Again, Splash was the first one to give us that trait, but like Aquamarine and Fishtails, there is an additional thing. They have to be mermaids, not necessarily during the night, but at low tide, which is at night. For some reason, I thought it was the other way around. So yeah, I guess it's Aquamarine to that point. And often this results in the sisters getting in sticky situations. But like I said, not for long. There's a little bit more to this in my next point. The next trait would be the magical item. I find that this often tends to be some kind of accessory, like a piece of jewelry, maybe a rock. It's not necessarily like a MacGuffin kind of thing. It might come up once and never again. So it's not like the plans to the Death Star or something. It's not like the briefcase in Pulp Fiction. It's just a thing. It's not always going to be like a big thing, but it's a thing. Keeping in mind particularly the story of Betty, Venus as well, but Betty is especially important to this. Earl held on to Betty's power item, which is the seashell, for as long as they were together. He was in possession of her item, so he was able to control her. She belonged to him, as Venus did while he kept her tiara. He made that very clear. We can actually trace that back to the Merrows of Ireland, often described as green-haired maidens with fishtails and webbed fingers. Merrow men are described quite differently in Thomas Keightley's The Soul Cages, but we're not talking about Merrow men right now. Sorry. Maybe next time. One defining characteristic of the Merrow is its feathery red cap, which it can use to dive deep into the water. If that cap is stolen, then the Merrow loses its power and it can't go back home. The story of the Lady of Gullerus, I don't know if I got that name right, by Thomas Crofton Croker, tells the story of Dick Fitzgerald, who steals the red cap of a Merrow and marries her because he's lonely or something. Never mind that that's kidnapping. What a dick indeed. We can apply that pretty loosely to Diana or June in the case of Venus, and especially Betty is more blatant. In fact, with that glorious green hair, Betty may as well have been a Merrow, now I think about it. But that's basically what it is. Like, the shell, the tiara, the little hair clip, the compact, the birthright, that's basically their red cap. So, and it's, again, that was especially in the case of Betty and Venus. Briefly, Diana, while she's in the cell. In the case of June, it never happens. I don't know. Next one is the superpowers. This is an extremely common one, but it still comes up because you had H2O and other things. But H2O, I think, is just the first thing that comes to mind, even though it's not a movie. I keep bringing it up. It's important, okay? And also, I spent like almost all summer watching the first season, so bear with me. So H2O, another Tree of Mermaids, hello, and they all had a unique superpower. But with them, they're all based around water. Same thing with Scales and how Siren totally owned Brody at the end by dehydrating him, and then she has like her own water manipulation powers. This movie, like I said, predates H2O, and obviously Scales, but their powers aren't exactly limited to water. Diana has like super strength. June can talk to animals, though mostly sea creatures. Venus does that seductive Siren hypnotism thing. Betty's probably got something too, but I don't think it's ever made clear. There's something to be said as well about June's story basically mimicking that of the Little Mermaid. She has sisters. She defies her father to live on the land to see what she's missing or something. She loves this human man. There's something mentioned toward the end about giving everything to the sea witch, which is never explained, so there's that. Maybe that was supposed to be part of the series that never happened. She saves the human man she loves from drowning at some point. She walks on land, and eventually he becomes engaged to another woman. But she doesn't die, so that's nice. I think that's one of many criticisms people have about the original story of The Little Mermaid, that, how do I put this? Like, a woman is punished for going out and fulfilling her dream, or going after what she wants, or being happy about something? You know what I'm trying to say here. It's something like that. So like The Little Mermaid, June misses out on her man, but she still gets to live. Now, as for my final thoughts, I'm going to be honest with you. As a fan of corny superhero action movies, I kind of liked what this was trying to accomplish. I think it was trying to set up this, like, mermaid superhero-ish goddess kind of thing. And maybe cable TV wasn't ready for that. Again, you're talking to someone, like, I've I've seen Daredevil a few times, not recently. And that was about the same time this movie came out. So I think that was it was kind of taking that kind of angle. I also liked that this was a TV pilot. I just didn't like that it didn't go anywhere. Because, come on, we need more mermaid shows. We just lost Siren. We got Slim Pickens. And I also really love the development of like the mermaid lore, the marriage of the mythology and the fairy tales, because obviously mythology and fairy tales are different things. And of course, the sisters' personalities are also, I think, very well defined. I would have liked for the tension to be a bit more drawn out in some cases. Like I said, some cases, it's not a huge deal. My biggest problem is, like I said, is the treatment of women, specifically of the three sisters. And a lot of it has to do with unwritten laws of the mermaid lore, like the wishing clause and the stolen magical items. The way the lore works just keeps the mermaids under the submission of humans, particularly men who want to take advantage of them. I get that the mermaids win in the end. And I get that they have agency. I get that they're strong. But the lore is still built to work against them on land. Maybe because they're out of their element, sure, but why would a change of environment rob them of their agency? It's just kind of troubling that despite all their strong qualities, they couldn't escape being at the whim of someone who has their fancy item, or even just says the words, "I wish," out just offhand. It's kind of troubling. But overall, this is basically the early 2000s pre-MCU mermaid superhero movie you didn't ask for, but here it is anyway. Now, if only got that series order. It's one of those things where, like, I think I would like it more as a TV pilot. You can tell it's very made for TV. Not saying that's a bad thing. My second episode was literally the 13th year. I love the 13th year. But it definitely has that feeling, and it definitely the way it's paced, the kind of doors it opens, it kind of opens itself up to it definitely sets itself up as a TV pilot. But clearly something did not happen there. Like I said, I don't think cable TV was ready for a mermaid show just yet. Again, this is pre-Siren. This is pre-H2O. This is even, I think, pre that one episode of Charmed where Phoebe became a mermaid. Oh, look, we're talking about Charmed again. Oh, wow. But again, I still liked it. I still thought it was fun. I like movies that are fun. I like to have fun. Even if it's like a bad movie, if it's a fun movie, I'll take it. I will admit on record to having seen Catwoman numerous times. And now you are more than welcome to take away the movie card that I don't have. Yeah. Anyway, that's Mermaids. There it is. The episode about mermaids. It's here. We did it. That's it. We talked about it, and I think I'm better for it. Anyway, we have new episodes every second and fourth Tuesday of each month. So our next episode is coming to you on October 13th. It is the first of our Halloween shows in October. How fitting. No, I didn't plan it like that. Life, finds a way. So it's October 13th. I wish it were a Friday. That would have been so fitting. This October 13th, we're going to look at the Swiss horror drama Blew My Mind. That's blue like the color blue. So it's not BLEW, it's BLUE. Don't get it twisted. Blew My Mind. That one is free to watch on Tubi if you have that. If you don't, it's free. And there's actually a ton of mermaid horror movies you can choose from on that service if you want to get into those. So Tubi, get into that. I'm not paid by them, I'm not sponsored by them. It's just something my uncle used a lot, and he was like, "Hey, you should use this. There's a lot of free movies on it." I was like, "Okay, that sounds awesome. Thanks." So I've kind of been into it. And then of course it's available on Amazon Prime Video, and if you have a Prime Video subscription, it's free to watch. And if you have a Shudder subscription, it is also available. Fair warning on this film. I'm going to go ahead and warn you about this in advance. It does include some pretty intense body horror, in addition to some sexual content and drug use. So I just thought I'd warn you about that in advance. Also, it is in German, but it does have English subtitles. Not like I haven't done foreign language films here before. So it's nothing new. Now, since I only do two shows a month, I'll be putting up a list of mermaid-themed horror movies to check out this month that I won't have time to cover. So get ready for that. And I'll also be putting up the October schedule on the first of this month. Of course, you already know that we're doing... It's basically just going to let you know what we're, that we're doing Blew My Mind on the 13th. And then whatever the second movie is. I have not revealed that yet. I have it scheduled, but I have not revealed what it is yet. You will find out when Blew My Mind comes out. No, you'll find out on the first, because I think that's what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be putting up the schedule on the first of every month. Hopefully that pans out. Hopefully like the first Tuesday, because the second Tuesday of the month is never going to land on the first. So I think I'm safe there. But yeah, first of every month, you're going to get the schedules. I think that's what I did with September. And so that's where we're going to go. So October 1st, schedule. October 13th, Blew My Mind. Maybe there will be some surprises along the way. But if I told you, there wouldn't be surprises. Who knows? Maybe there'll be surprises to me. But until then, post-episode Xandria, take us out. Thanks for tuning in to the Mermaid Movie Club for this discussion of mermaids. Be sure to tune in on October 13th for a talk about Blew My Mind. For more Mermaid Movie Club updates, visit the homepage at mermaidmovieclub.tumblr.com and follow me on social media. All my profiles are in the show notes. We've got new episodes every second and fourth Tuesday of every month, so be sure to subscribe on the app of your choice, tell all your merfriends about the show, and please rate and review on Apple Podcasts. It really helps. And you can also leave me a voice message on the Anchor app. Until then, this has been Mermaid's Andrea. Have an amazing day and a fantastic tomorrow. You know, more people should ask mermaids what they wish for. Why is it always, where's the mermaid, and not, how's the mermaid? Shellfish jerks.